This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Trucks carrying migrants north frequently break down in the desert. In other cases, they become lost or the smugglers simply abandon people to their fates. To this day, no one knows how many migrants have died attempting to cross the Sahara.
That was International Organization for Migration spokesman Joel Millman on efforts to save migrants in the Sahara Desert. Details next. Also, one person died and four others were wounded in separate explosions in the center of the Tunisian capital, Tunis. And a stampede in Madagascar's capital for an Independence Day concert has left 16 people dead. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the International Organization for Migration reports it has succeeded in rescuing nearly 20,000 migrants from near death in the Sahara Desert over the past 2.5 years when it began its life-saving operation. Lisa Schlein reports from IOM headquarters in Geneva.
The last big rescue mission occurred on June 15th in Niger. An International Organization for Migration team canvassing the scorching desert terrain found 406 migrants stranded under the searing sun without water or food. IOM spokesman Joel Millman says the group included men, women, and children from 14 West African countries, mainly from Guinea-Conakry, Mali, and Ivory Coast. He says they were bound for North Africa, a stepping stone to Europe and a hoped-for better life.
Trucks carrying migrants north frequently break down in the desert. In other cases, they become lost or the smugglers simply abandon people to their fates. To this day, no one knows how many migrants have died attempting to cross the Sahara.
Millman tells VOA the thousands of lives IOM has succeeded in saving are only a drop in the ocean.
We know that probably thousands of victims their remains aren't even evident anymore because they're covered by sand or consumed by animals. We can only rely on luck, I would say mostly, and the ability to get resources marshaled. Sometimes local authorities can be very helpful. Sometimes resources are really stretched.
Rescued migrants are taken to one of several IOM transit centers where they receive emergency humanitarian assistance. Millman says 98% of the migrants accept IOM's offer to help them return to their homes. Despite their brush with death, he says after a year or so, many migrants frequently decide to once again embark on the dangerous Sahara Desert crossing toward North Africa. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
One person died and four others were wounded in separate explosions in the center of the Tunisian capital, Tunis, today. The bombings coincided with news that the ailing president of the country was hospitalized in critical condition for unspecified reasons. Edward Uranian reports from Cairo.
An eyewitness recorded the aftermath of one of the two bombings near the French embassy in the center of the capital, Tunis, Thursday afternoon, shouting that a strong explosion had struck the area. A suicide bomber also detonated an explosive belt near a security forces counterterrorism center. Pictures from the scene of the blast showed a police vehicle riddled by shrapnel. At least one police officer died in the blast, in addition to the bomber. Tunisian Prime Minister Youssef El-Shahed told journalists not far from the site of one of the blasts that terrorists are trying to disrupt both the economy and the political life of the country. He says it was a cowardly terrorist act that ended in failure and that the terrorists were trying to cause political chaos in the lead-up to the presidential elections in the fall, in addition to wrecking the economy by blowing things up on the heels of the tourist season. The terrorist attacks in the capital coincided with reports that ailing President Bajika Desabsi had suffered a serious health crisis and was taken to a military hospital for treatment. Reports by Arab news channels that he had died were denied by presidential advisor Firas Gefrah, who had tweeted earlier that Desabsi was in critical condition. People chanted outside the presidential palace after hearing reports that the president had been hospitalized. Analysts and commentators noted that the president has not been in good health in recent weeks. It was not clear if Desabsi was stricken after hearing news of the bombings. Egyptian political sociologist Saeed Sadiq, who frequently travels to Tunisia, tells VOA that the Tunisian constitution calls for the constitutional court to meet if the president falls ill, but that the body was dissolved due to political quarreling. Sadiq points out that the constitution also calls for the parliament speaker to take over for an interim period in case of the president's incapacitation, but that he is also ailing and infirm, making it unclear who will take over. Sadiq thinks that Prime Minister Shahid might try to take over during the interim if the president is incapacitated, since he is one of the top candidates in expected presidential elections this fall. Saudi-owned Al Arabiya TV reported that top members of parliament were due to hold an informal session later Thursday to discuss the president's health. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
A stampede by people trying to get into a stadium in Madagascar's capital for an Independence Day concert left 16 people dead and 80 injured last night. Officials said the performance by popular singer Rosi was about to start and the crowd outside surged forward, but the doors were closed and people in front fell and were trampled. The dead included 3 children, and the death toll was expected to rise, with several people in critical condition. President Andry Rajoelina visited some of the injured in the hospital and said the government would pay their medical bills. The concert was to follow a military parade in the stadium that was attended by Rajoelina and Rwandan President Paul Kagame. The U.S. government, through USAID, is providing food assistance and other emergency supplies to millions of people affected by food insecurity and violence in East Africa. Speaking to VOA, Rebecca Sims, USAID's regional food and peace officer, said the humanitarian situation remains dire in countries with conflicts such as Somalia and South Sudan. From the Kenyan capital, VOA's Ruben Chama reports.
In response to deteriorating conditions, Sims said Wednesday that USAID and its partners are providing food, water, and sanitation services.
There are currently about 27 million people across the region who don't have enough food to eat. And this year, we have seen upticks in several countries in the region due to the poor rainy season that we've had the last few months. In some countries also, we're seeing negative effects on food security because of conflict. People who aren't able to farm because there's conflict in their area, or they become displaced, they're forced to leave their homes, and then they also don't have access to food. So these are very concerning situations.
She says young children are at the greatest risk of malnutrition.
Children under the age of 5 are the most susceptible to food insecurity. So this is something that USAID is very focused on addressing. We have programs both to prevent malnutrition for children under 5, where we identify children who are at risk of becoming malnourished, and we can provide them supplementary nutrition products to help them stay healthy. And we also have programs to treat children who are already malnourished to help them get better.
The Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, says the situation continues to worsen. But Sims says USAID and other agencies are cooperating to help communities to cope and adapt to severe weather shocks, as well as help prevent conflict. She says there are some success stories. In 2017, during a severe drought that affected the coastal region, the Kenyan government availed some $18 million for emergency food assistance to the affected communities.
We worked with the Kenyan government and with the World Food Program to develop that infrastructure. And they also worked with Safaricom, which is the mobile telecom provider that many people use in Kenya. And they created a mobile money system, which was able to get that Kenyan government money to Kenyans in need. And just required a small amount of investment from the U.S. government, and that money was able to get where it needed to go.
The top USAID official says this year the entire system and infrastructure has been handed over to the Kenyan government so it continues providing assistance when it is needed. She praised Kenyan authorities, noting that in recent years the country has made significant progress on response to emergency situations despite the daunting challenges in the region.
Kenya has made great strides in the last few years in being able to respond to emergencies and to stresses on their own. Over time, they are needing less and less assistance from the international community. We are still here to provide assistance whenever there is a gap, when assistance is needed. But the Kenyan government is really stepping up and being able to take on a lot of these needs themselves.
Commenting on the agency's operations in countries engulfed in war and civil strife, such as Somalia and South Sudan, SIMS says aid workers are unable to reach populations in urgent need of food assistance due to conflict. USAID is the world's largest provider of food assistance. In 2018, the agency provided more than $1.8 billion worth of food assistance across the Eastern and Central Africa region, reaching a total of 13 countries. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
The World Health Organization is asking Ugandans to have faith in the trial vaccine being used to contain the Ebola outbreak near the border with Congo. This follows reports that 13 people who came in contact with the virus declined to be vaccinated. Halima Atumani reports from Kampala.
Since 2018, Uganda has vaccinated nearly 5,000 people, including medical officers, frontline health workers, and most recently, people who came into contact with the virus in the Western Kasese district. However, 13 of the 94 confirmed contact persons in Kasese district declined to be vaccinated. Village health coordinator Mbusa Joffre tells VOA the 13 believe that only prayer can protect them from the virus. In an interview with VOA, Matsidi Somoetsi, the World Health Organization Regional Director for Africa, said the Ebola vaccine is 97% effective.
So it is still an experimental vaccine because there is a protocol to follow until it's been used to a certain extent, and then the data can be put together to definitively determine its effectiveness. But I do believe that we have enough experience with this vaccine now to know that it's an extremely effective vaccine. So people can have faith in it.
Early this month, Uganda confirmed its first three Ebola cases of the current outbreak. All three patients, two of whom died, had crossed over from the Democratic Republic of Congo, where a raging Ebola outbreak has killed more than 1,500 people. Ugandan Health Minister Ruth Aceng says those who do not want to be vaccinated have not been adequately sensitized.
My appeal to the 13 who have declined vaccination is for them to come out and get vaccinated. We want them alive. And we also want to ensure that other people are alive. It is for their own good.
Even though there are no new confirmed cases in Uganda, the country remains at risk due to the heavy influx of refugees fleeing conflicts in the eastern part of Congo. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
19 past the hour, you are listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Separatists in Cameroon's restive English-speaking regions have freed a prominent Catholic archbishop they kidnapped on Tuesday. Archbishop Cornelius Fontim Isua, who was on a visit to the troubled regions to preach peace, said he asked the separatists to drop their weapons and stop killing. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Bamenda in northwestern Cameroon.
More than 100 clergy and Catholic faithful sing and pray at the Mankon Cathedral in the northwestern town of Bamenda to thank God for saving the life of their Archbishop, Cornelius Fontem Esua. Esua says he was abducted on Tuesday by separatist fighters in a locality called Jinikijem while on a trip to preach peace in regions where a separatist war has raged for the past 2 years.
The road was blocked. I stood there for some time. Some boys came in and said, no, you cannot go, you should go back. And they gave me the number of a certain general. And they called and let me talk to him. He said, no, you cannot pass, it has been blocked. I came down, I removed the barrier, and I passed. The boys came, about five or six of them, very aggressively shouting, who do you think you are? You mishandled my driver. No, we are taking you to our camp.
Esua says he was taken to the bush with four of his companions. He says they were not physically assaulted while in captivity. The Archbishop says he told the hundreds of youths and the man who called himself the general commanding separatist forces in the area that they should stop killing, maiming and abducting people whom they say they are trying to liberate.
I told them, you are making people to suffer. I said, we cannot achieve anything good with evil. Thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not make other people to suffer. People whom you pretend to be fighting for are suffering. I talked to people about education. Get the schools open.
Esua said they listened to him attentively and replied that they were fighting to save their land and people before asking him to leave after more than 13 hours in captivity. The Archbishop did not say if a ransom was paid for his release. It was not the first time clergy have been abducted by the English-speaking separatists who want to break away from Cameroon's French-speaking majority. The Catholic Church says dozens of its nuns and priests have been kidnapped and released. Many believe the church paid to secure their release, an allegation the church denies. Security analyst Eugene Ongba, a consultant with Cameroon's NGO Ecumenical Service for Peace, says the separatists have not been killing priests as they do with many other people they abduct because the Catholic Church has preached against abuses by the government and calls on the central government to listen to the fighters.
Auparavant, quand on prenait un prêtre dans les églises catholiques, je pense que pour passer un message,
he says when the crisis began, separatist fighters kidnapped and killed missionaries and foreign workers to put pressure on the international community to intervene and force the government of Cameroon to grant their requests. He says the separatists seem to have dropped that option because the world already knows their grievances and that the Archbishop may have had his life saved because he has been very neutral, though vocal about the need for the government to listen to the separatists. The Catholic Church says besides the abductions, it has lost at least 9 clergy members. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News. Bamenda, Cameroon.
The Foreign and Commonwealth Office of the United Kingdom has warned British nationals against traveling to about 21 states in Nigeria over security concerns. The travel warning on its website was updated on Monday and stemmed from the worsening security due to Boko Haram terror attacks in the northeast, armed banditry in the northwest, and militancy in the south. President Muhammadu Buhari says government is winning the fight against insurgency and other crimes in the country. Two states, Rivers and Akwa Ibom in the south, that were mentioned in the report, have written to the British government making assurances that they are safe for business and tourism. Dr. David Aworawo is an associate professor and an expert in security, conflict, and conflict resolution at the University of Lagos. He spoke with reporter Mike Mbonye about the effects of the travel ban on the Nigerian economy and tourism, saying potential tourists may not come.
Usually when travel bans are issued like this, some citizens who had plans to travel to Nigeria and some who maybe were considering traveling to Nigeria at some point will have a rethink and maybe go to some other countries. So almost all the time when we have this kind of travel ban, warnings presented, tourism is affected negatively.
The Nigerian government says some media reports about kidnapping and other crimes are fake. What's your take on this, sir?
Well, that comment, they give no proof, so it's not something I believe. Rather, I believe that it is real, because the people kidnapped, they come out, they talk about their experiences, they talk about ransom paid. For instance, a professor in Ife was kidnapped about a month or so ago, and we came and mentioned how much was paid as ransom. So when the government says some of the stories are fake and we don't have evidence, but the ones that are genuine, we have evidence. It's difficult for me to believe the government claim that some of those stories are not genuine.
What's your assessment of government's fight against insurgency and other crimes in the country?
It's been less than impressive. Ineffective totally in some respects. Ineffective in some other respects. The ease with which people are kidnapped, people are killed, can only lead to that conclusion. And so, again, what one would say is that government needs to do a lot more. I don't know what has happened to intelligence gathering. These things don't just happen, people plan to execute these things. And it seems that nobody has any information. We just hear that a group of people have invaded some places and killed so many people and all that. Even the military is even attacked. And the only conclusion you can draw from that is that government approach has not worked as expected. The level of success is less than impressive. And a lot more needs to be done for greater security to be ensured.
Do you also think that other countries might give their citizens in Nigeria same travel warning?
Certainly. Incidentally, once the United States issues travel warning and the United Kingdom does so, many other countries tend to follow suit. I feel very strongly that some other countries will follow that path, which is not unexpected. And it's not unprecedented, too, because over time we've had warnings like that. The responsibility is on Nigerian government to provide greater security so people can have assurance of security when they come to the country. Although there are some diehards, it doesn't matter what the government says, all those travel warnings, they will still come. But of course, there are some who are afraid who will not come. But at the end of the day, providing greater security in Nigeria so that people can have the assurance of safety when they come is the most important thing.
That was Dr. David Aworawo, an expert in security, conflict, and conflict resolution at the University of Lagos, speaking with reporter Mike Mbonye. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Cedric Franklin, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.